Good evening. It is 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday evening. And this is, what is this, Ivan?
I mean, it's not close like to the solar eclipse.
You know, we should have a name for this. Should have a name. It's Wednesday night, right? The Wednesday night.
Well, isn't it right now the work of groups?
Well, right now we happen to be in the work of groups,
okay,
which is Volume 5 of Secret Talks by E.J. Gold. And we are on page 101 and chapter 41 of that book. It's hard to know exactly where to go with some of this material. And you know what? Basically, I read some of the material, and then what's a better word than react?
Respond?
I read the material and then I give feedback. My reflection.
Okay.
I reflect on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I reflect on this material, and in that reflection, not that I think it has anything fundity, but it's just my reflections on it. And it so it gives us a forum to reflect together. Maybe that's it. Okay, we're a reflection group here, all right, Marvette? We reflect, you know, like a mirror or a pond. The moon comes up and you see its reflection, and that's what we're doing. And I'm kind of carrying on a little bit here because Dan is just settling in, and he's getting himself ready for the voyage, and he's strapped in. He's got his safety belt on. And I think we're ready to go, Ike.
Okay. Do I need a helmet tonight?
You will need a helmet. Everybody will pretty much need a helmet.
David has assured me I need safety gear tonight.
Before we get started, what we normally do is that it's interesting because we have a scribe, we're able to do things that normally we wouldn't be able to do. And since we have a scribe, what we're able to do is call out some of the points that are the elements of group within the event that takes place. Last week 21, we had a class, and some of the elements that are group level were recorded, and we recorded in a particular book, and Ivan is about to read that as a recap of those points next week. Is that right? Can you do that?
Yes, I can, and I especially appreciate this.
Good, thank you.
It's on the road. 8/9/17, Wednesday, Work of Groups, number 21. 1, Roman numeral 1, actually. Operations of a group discussed. 1, what does focus of the group mean? Is it a cumulative meaning, that number of folks? Is 1 plus 1 plus 1 has an added effect? Or does the focus increase over time? Is that accurate? Does that sound accurate to you?
That's what she wrote.
I'm going to read it again. Is it a cumulative meaning? That number of folks is 1 plus 1 plus 1 has an added effect, or does the focus increase over time? Responses. A, the resultant effect is more than the sum of the parts. Group focus follows the principle of the parts working in a synergy.
Okay.
B, the video game Diablo 2 demonstrates synergy in a way so understanding is gained by the body, no longer a linear concept. C, Hasidic Judaism says when 10 are gathered, certain religious things are possible. some of that. It's called a minion. D, in the Bible, it says, where two or more are gathered, something can happen.
And that, of course, is the New Testament, and that's Jesus saying, when two or more are gathered, I am there also.
In my name,
And, you know, but I didn't
emphasize that. E, with people participating online in this space, and in this space, and including viewers of the archives, we have over time collected multiple moments, the effect of placed, focused attention. So with everyone placing their attention in the same way, there is a multiple connectivity. It's not only in one form or it's not only in one form or not only in one chamber or not only in one time.
Let's expand on that a little bit. I think what we understood is that even though it's a moment in time, like for instance, this is occurring at 7:05 on this evening, August 16th, on the west coast of California, right?
Right.
But there's also an eternality about it. Sorry.
F. This is next, F. This group focus isn't just this chamber in the moment. It's this chamber in its eternality. And the archives are sitting online in potentia.
It is a word.
This is Latin, right?
Correct.
What are we, doctors? Okay.
Keep going.
Sorry, that was my comment.
John.
Two. We could put our focused attention together and draw on it to use. Three, we know that a certain dynamism of individuals gathered allows us to host something.
So that's the previous to the last point. We have an opportunity when we're together to do certain things that we could not do except that we're together. All right?
Okay.
And so we can, and I've been thinking about this quite a bit and this point. When we work together, we are lifted, and just in a kind of a exact way, we're lifted. We're in a higher place, and therefore we can see more. When we can see more, we should, in a sense, see what we can see and gather that, because when we leave the space, we're not there anymore. I know it seems like so axiomatic in a certain way, but my thing is to be aware of the dynamics of what are going on around us in these magical places, because we can name them. Let's just do it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Okay, what are you're saying you want to be aware of the dynamics, but also do this.
Yeah. We are aware of
the dynamics. Note it down.
The more we are aware of the dynamics, the more potent they become, because we engender them with more attention, and then they're enlivened just a little bit more. Okay. We'll see if somebody comes to the door.
Marvette has a comment.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to reiterate what you said again.
Yeah.
The more we, can you say it again?
Okay. So.
I had it. I mean, it was just so perfectly crystal. I had it so crystal clear, and then it just fell off.
That's okay. It's just that there are the mechanics of dynamism in this particular space, And part of what we're doing, given the opportunity that EJ has given us called work of groups, is paying attention to that dynamism, Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
We're paying attention to it. When we focus on it, for instance, when we focus on the added energy and dynamism of the space, suddenly it kind of comes out. We notice it, right? And when you notice it, it's just enhanced a little bit more. And when it's enhanced a little bit more, then we become true voyagers in the space. Because we're aware of the dynamics of the space, and we operate within it. This is important for some of what you're doing too. It's, we keep our attention on the dynamics of it. So let's, for instance, go ahead, you got it? Go for it.
And you haven't gotten there yet to the sentence that I was going to really reiterate, which was you had said that the more we pay attention to it, it is also enlivening.
Correct.
And that is one of our goals, to enliven the space. That is part of what we do as a group invocationally. And I think that's kind of one of the basic principles of most magical spiritual spaces, is to gather to enliven it so that you can all ascend. And so this is one of our tools to help in that. And so I wanted to really, you know, bring that home that you had said, enliven the space.
You're underlining it.
Yes.
Let me give you an example. I was in a... there's a dynamic of how organizations work, sociocracy. And it's a dynamic where the group consciously does exercise in decision making where they work together. Okay? At some point, the concept of the group mind came out. Now, 90% of the people there have heard of the group mind. They've heard of it. The concept of, oh, the group mind, sure. But then when you point to it and you say, the group mind is active now. Think of that. The difference in the dynamics is this, Marvin, is that the person then is in the space themselves, not their brain. Their brain is gone, right? The person moves into the space. And when the person moves into the space, they are sacrificing their mechanicality to the space. Okay?
But you're also talking about, it's interesting to me that it's sounding like a principle of lucid dreaming to me, because it's not just, I'm not just...
you're not just sleep and dreaming.
Well, I'm thinking in the space that you're talking about, I'm not just moving into essence, you know, moving into an essence perception or an essence vibration. I'm also... coaxing myself or developing the habit of being aware that I'm in the essence vibration.
That's right. And so and that leads exactly to where we are tonight.
Good.
Which is chapter 41 in the Secret Talks volume number 5. And you don't have a phone. Dan, do you have a phone? No. Let's do a round robin of reading. Okay. Silverdale, can you join us with the reading?
Absolutely.
Harry, are you there? Didn't think so. Okay. So why don't we do this? Dan, would you like to start? It'd be Dan, Paula, Ivan, George, myself. Is that okay? Marvette, did you want to read?
No.
Okay. Is that okay with you, Dan, or would you like me to start? Thank you. Yeah. Take us out.
chapter 41, responsibility. Once we have heard these ideas, we are responsible to some degree. We are expected to work because we brought ourselves to these ideas. Bringing ourselves to these ideas is an act of responsibility in itself.
There really is waning of soul, but not between good and bad. As ordinary man thinks, waning of souls examines how we use our last hour. The quality of our last hour says everything about the quality of our whole life.
Ivan?
The original myth concerned the weighing of the soul against a feather. The more weight the soul had accumulated, the higher quality of the life. In the Egyptian Book of the Dead, it is understood that what one does in the last hour determines how the soul will be judged impartially to pass or not pass beyond organic life.
Silverdale?
Suppose in our last hour we are able to amplify impressions and we're continually perfecting presence. This would give more weight to the soul.
Eventually, we may understand what to do with our last hour. Okay. Now, this is a very short chapter, and for some reason, the author entitled it Responsibilities. But when I read the chapter, let's go through it in detail, and it's worth the lift, I think. So paragraph one, Ivan.
Yes.
So is this along the lines of what we were talking about a little bit earlier?
Yes.
It is. Okay, once we have heard these ideas, now let me clarify that. Many people hear the ideas and they just keep going, right? They just walk past the store. They just, and it's like a mental, interesting. But that's it. Some people hear the ideas, they enter into the store, and they go, what are you doing here? They actually get involved with those ideas. So that's called they heard the ideas. Okay? They actually heard the ideas. And it says, soon as we have heard them, we are responsible to some extent. What the heck does that mean? What does it mean? You've heard them. It's like you walk into the place, you accept the, we're on page 101. You hear the ideas. How does just hearing the ideas make you responsible for something? Doesn't make sense to me. Some of the, there's several hands have gone up.
Comment.
I think it's the fact that you open, it's like opening a door. And then suddenly once you open that, you cannot ignore it, no matter what you do. So you can pretend that you, oh, I didn't see anything, but that will keep with you where you go. And that will be kind of like, in a way, grinding you, then knowing that you saw a door and you are trying to avoid it. That's the way it has happened to me.
Uh-huh. Thank you for that. That's a very honest, comment. I mean, to me, what I get the feeling from this, which is related somehow to the terror of the situation.
Yeah.
And the reason is because this, in my life, you know, for those of us who are older than
others,
67 years ago or whatever, this event happened a long time ago in my life. Once we have heard these ideas, we are responsible to some degree. And it causes me immediately to examine, to think about examining my present life, examining where I've arrived, and whether I've adequately, you know, taken up this responsibility. I think it has to do with consequences. It's like, okay, I had a choice, like you were saying. I had a choice to walk away when I had these ideas. And I've seen many, over actually many years, I've seen many people walk away. But
sure.
I mean, since those of us, in fact, everybody who's in this circle now listening, all of us who did not walk away, we made a choice. And this one line, actually, this opening paragraph, it's actually two sentences, but this is reminding me, it's calling up to me the idea that there are consequences to the choice that I made.
I would say, when I reflect on my life, that the introduction to the work started probably when I was nine, you know, a little boy. I didn't know it, of course, at the time, but when I reflect back, I can see the opening starting to occur. But a more formal thing, I remember being on a beach in Venice, California. I think I was 19, maybe I was 20. Young man, and somehow I started talking to this young woman there. She was there with the standard flowing ethnic skirts, you know, the hippie garb of the time of this early 70s. And she invited me to her house, which was just a block off the beach. And we walked in. It was just a beautifully, it was all the statuary of India, you know, of various things. And she started reading the Ramana Maharshi to me. Now, I mean, not the Ramana Maharshi, Ramana Maharshi, the guy, the Ramayana. And the Ramayana, and I was like entranced by this. And I knew I couldn't stop, whatever it was. I didn't know what she was, why exactly she had invited me to her home, but all I remember was I got entranced with that, and then I left. I mean, I was a little on the naive side at the time. Okay. But anyway, so I remember just this opening up, right? Mm-hmm. And almost like he's saying that once you've heard, I knew that at that point I had heard the ideas, and I couldn't let them go. It was a responsibility on my shoulder at that moment. Let's go to the next paragraph. Go ahead.
Read it again?
Yeah.
There really is weighing of soul, not between good and bad, as ordinary man thinks. Weighing of soul examines how we used our last hour. The quality of our last hour says everything about the quality of our whole life.
We had, I don't know how many times we did it, the practical work on self. We had this at 7 a.m. in the morning. We did it for, I don't know, a long time. And we got stuck on practical work on self, chapter 24, last hour of life. And we just kept reading it and reading it and reading it. So when I was reading this particular book here tonight, that we're reading tonight, I started thinking about myself. I'm an old guy. I'm 67 years old. I can see, it's pretty clear to me I'm going to die pretty soon, you know, 20 years, 15 years, next week, I don't know, but it's going to happen. It's becoming tangible to me. And I think about that, and I think, okay, you know, what if I'm sitting there and I know I'm going to die? You know, what am I going to be like? Half of the time when I consider that, I think, I'm going to panic. I'm going to lose it. I'm going to panic. But it seems that this weighing of soul thing is axiomatic. Of course it's going to occur. It's like the culmination of your work on the planet is going to show itself. You're on stage. That's what I wrote in the email. It's like you're on stage, and you are going to deliver your own eulogy. You know what a eulogy is? Eulogy is what is said, people reflecting on your life. How will I do? In Japan, those guys write a death poem.
Yeah, the Zen masters.
Well, the samurai warriors.
Monks or war, yeah.
The samurai warriors is like, you know, it's a good day to die. Here's my death poem. And there's a certain beauty in doing that. If you have presence of mind, can you read your death poem as you're dying? Or are you going to panic and say, wait, not me. Take him.
Is that the practice?
Take my
I'm just thinking of EJ has every once in a while he'll have someone read the story that Mark Twain wrote, Famous Last Words, or I forget the exact title.
Famous Last Words
of Famous People, and he goes through and critiques them.
Yeah.
But there is a significance to that beyond just the humor of it.
Yeah, the significance is, what will be your death poem, Dan? Because you are going to die. I mean, unless there's something different between you and the last 7.5 billion people on the planet. But I know in my case, a very ordinary individual, in many, many ways, extremely ordinary, and then I'm going to die. And it makes sense. It's not so much that, it's like, I feel like it's like in, what was that movie with Meryl Streep and Weighing Your Life, or Nobelin?
Oh.
Defending your life. It's similar to that. That was obviously very Hollywood and a little too sentimental for me. But I think it's just like you are in front of the judge and God says, well, how'd you do? You know, and you look and you go, well, I had all these things I did wrong. Doesn't want to hear all that. He's heard all the sins.
Actually, as I recall, the essence of the defending was that you went back and reviewed not the entire life, but there were dramatic moments, particular moments were picked out. You know, just to say, how did you conduct yourself? At the under stress or at these crucial moments.
The conversation reminds me, EJ wrote a blog, I think 2 days ago, and he mentions in a part something, die before you die. And I think that has a lot to do with this, because it's not about too much of, oh, what are the good deeds? Again, that's what the majority of men think it is. It's the good and the bad, and it's not like that. But it is actually, how do you bring awareness before you were dead and the last moment to actually realize, or were you working about that before it actually happens? So I think that's a good point to remember.
Yeah. Oh, and I think also, you know, in line with that, what he's saying here, he's suggesting very strongly in this, you know, from where he starts in this very short chapter, saying that your that last hour, that last moment of your life is the reflection of whether you've done this, what he said. We are expected to work because we brought ourselves to these ideas. So what if, you know, have you done it? Have, you know, has how is your work reflected in this atmosphere, in the state, in the presence of, you know, of your termination, of your last breath, your last hour, your last minute, your last breath.
Go ahead. Okay.
Marvette's got something to add.
I think you said the key word, present. Because when you're really present, you're melting in vibrating fusion. You are, your resistance dissolves. You become one. And that's the transition. Just going through very smoothly without attachment, without resistance. Your presence, and you can carry. Right now, EJ is really talking about you're not your organic body. You are a voyager. There's a lot of robots out there running around there, and have compassion because they're programmed. But you are not that. And so, I mean, as these crucial times come to a close, because it looks like they may very soon, you bring that presence, the work that you've done this life, and you bring it through.
Yeah, and you have a responsibility. You know, that's what I take it.
What is that responsibility?
Well, because I heard these ideas and I made a choice. I have a responsibility to work on presence, to prepare for that last moment of life. Well, there's another habit I want to cultivate. I will declare publicly that I want to cultivate the habit of remembering this idea here as often as possible in my everyday life. I mean, really, I want to wake up in the morning, feel like, oh, I'm groggy, I got to clear my head, and think, oh, well, am I ready to die this moment now, this breath? Am I ready to give all this up? Is there anything that I would clutch and hold on to right now, this morning? Anyway, maybe that's pathological.
Maybe.
I think actually to the people that EJ was talking about, I think it's the previous chapter because I just read it over recently. He says that the ordinary human, I mean, you know, in ordinary life, rather than mechanical human, you're condemned to end up as the product of your past.
That's right. That's right.
You just are the product of your past. Whereas if you are invoking presence, if you are in essence, or if you are working on yourself, you can repair the past and you can change. You can make change now. This moment, I can do something that changes the future, that changes who I am, actually.
Okay, repeat that again.
I was very moved by reading that passage.
This moment, I can do something. What'd you say?
I can do something that's not determined by my past. Change the outcome. I can change.
There it is.
Tomorrow. I can change what happens when I walk out of here. I can make it something different about it. Make something.
Well,
that's what he talks about. Go ahead, say that. He talks about repairing the past.
Yeah, that it is not necessarily being able to change things, but you can transform the attitude and the perception that you have about those things.
So, part of when I read this chapter, do you have a sense of your obligation because you've heard those ideas? Do you feel that little twinge of responsibility? And I'm not talking about, gosh, I'm doing the right thing because this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm doing the, you know, I think that they'll say I'm doing the right thing. No, it's, you feel that your own unique path that you should forge, your unique path, because you've been given that idea. It's the responsibility. It's curatorial. You have a curatorial responsibility. curatorial is a term that comes out of the world of museums. And the museum curator is, let's say, given a fine, let's just say, the actual manuscript that Herman Melville wrote on, the actual piece of paper that he wrote on prior to the publication of Moby Dick, for instance. Let's say that that came into your hand and you're at one of the great museums. Can you imagine the sense of responsibility you have to that? Because you're protecting it for the rest of humanity, forever. What's the difference between that and the fact that we've heard these unique ideas from E.J. Gold? We have a curatorial responsibility to keep them alive and fresh.
Yeah, you brought up another very good example for me, which is also that idea that this teaching comes alive in the transmission of
right.
it, in the communicating
there
of it. Because I just spent a weekend at this float conference up in Portland, Oregon, and I actually got reminded. I felt a little dazed a lot of the time. It was, you know, I was going through. It was kind of like very, you know, lull, very quiet, and I would go and hear some of the talks in the conference. They would take breaks, so there's like a 20-minute break or something like that, and then I would get inundated with people. Oh yeah, I need these books, and I want this. They're talking, and it would get very busy, and I would be juggling a receipt book and a calculator and a charge machine and all this stuff. But there were moments, both days, Saturday and Sunday this weekend, when I got reminded that I have this responsibility while doing this cover job, the cover story, being that I'm selling books for Gateways and IDHHB Inc. But because I had people, it happened to be actually young people in this case, because there are a lot of millennials in this float movement, you know, that are, and you should see the way how they admire Glenn and Lee Perry. It's quite amazing. They're big celebrities up there. But I had some young people like approach this table and say, and just ask me a question, you know, which was something much more essential. And then it reminded me that, okay, and now we're having this conversation, and you know, it was still part of the cover story. It's like, well, I have a specific example. There's one couple of young people, I guess they're either starting a float center or thinking of starting a float center or something, but they came up and they happened to pick up my book of poems, which was on the table, the Mykonos, Return to Mykonos, with a picture of Greece on the cover and so on. And we got into it, and they said to me, oh, we really want to go and visit Greece. And I said, oh, yeah, you have to do that. And they said, like, oh, well, where should we go in Greece? And then I started telling them about the Oracle of Delphi and this and that. I wasn't even doing this intentionally, but they were got quite spellbound. And it was a very
why did they
strong
get
exchange.
Why
well,
did they get spellbound? Not
because,
you. Not you.
Yeah, okay.
Why did they get spellbound? Dan? Or Silverdale?
I'm not sure why the young couple got spellbound with Ivan's book, Mykonos, but when I have an opportunity to share, I'd like to cast all of this into a whole different framework.
Okay, good. Let me finish. They were in trance. Is that the word you used?
Yeah, it was a vibrational phenomenon is what I was going to say, yeah.
From your presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. There's a responsibility we have also because we have worked on ourselves. We've created some presence of being who's actually alive. People don't know why they like being next to us. They just know they do. And so for some reason they want to talk and da-da-da-da. Because they're starting to walk by the store where the ideas are sold. Okay? And they're deciding whether they should go in or not and make a purchase. Go ahead. So do you have anything over there, Dan?
Oh, actually, yeah, before Silverdale jumps in, let me just say one thing, just as a footnote to this, which is something that it's always a sign to me. I sold one or two copies of the ABD at the table, which is telling me, you know, that's been my touchstone. Shows when I know I'm in the right place. When I have somebody comes up, you know, I'm in it for a completely different purpose of dealing with foreign rights or translation or whatever, you know, of the Gateways books. But when I have somebody just comes up and looks at the red book and says, "What is that?" you know, or "Tell me about this," and you get into this conversation, and it turns out, "Oh, my grandmother just died," or I need this book, and so on, and, you know, and that's basically.
I find it
one or two people.
I always find it just
as
impressive why others don't stop.
Well, yeah, they don't. It's actually that's the phenomenon. It's quite
right.
Invisible.
Unless
it's quite invisible. Unless there's a person needs that book. It's
unless you're ready to hear the idea.
Something.
Okay, go ahead then. Anything to read, or should we just?
Silverdale's got something for us. Though.
Well,
go ahead.
So Bernie says, it is told of a famous queen that refused to die because she did not remember her last words, which I think was supposedly Elizabeth I. And I brought up Zapata, who supposedly said, "For God's sake, tell them I said something," which may not be true, but still a good story.
Last one.
And Ivan says, "Right on, in the present moment," I'm sorry, DePaul says, "Yes, Ivan, right on, in the present moment, launch window."
Present moment is a launch window. And Silverdale, do you want to take a shot at it?
Well, I'll tell you, look, as a part of this group, I'm happy to share the thoughts I'm having. And they fall out in this particular way. As we go through these various chapters, we imagine that EJ is talking to a senior group of students. They're informed and knowledgeable about EJ and the work that he is pursuing. They're well informed. Well, that might describe us. And so we actually start off with a lot of, we presume that this particular group that he's talking to at this time already is familiar with some very basic ideas. And one of the most basic ideas about the work is that nobody is born with a soul at all. It's just, nobody's born with a soul. However, as EJ would say, the possibility exist for an individual to acquire a soul. That is the work. The work is to devote ourselves to the acquisition of a soul. And then, of course, this particular group would understand immediately how that's done. EJ happens to describe it in human biological machine. We have an organic machine. We have an essential self, and if we're somehow able to blend these two opposite ends of the spectrum together, we produce a third thing that we regard as our presence, and that presence, in fact, is the basis for our soul. Over time, with continual invocation of presence, we can actually grow that soul to in terms of weight and substance. And the hope is that we're able to do all of this before we physically expire, because when we physically expire, the possibility of blending our essential self and our organic machinery in order to produce that alchemical substance that allows us to create and grow our own soul no longer exists. So we're trying to increase the weight of our soul by the invocation of our presence, which I presume this group that EJ is talking to, in which some of the senior pupils have scratched out some shorthand notes to kind of remember the whole talk, so that when we come to the first paragraph, once we've heard these ideas, we're responsible to some degree. We are expected, well, look at, if we know that the whole of the work arises out of the possibility, only the possibility of creating our own soul, through a knowledge of the essential self and the organic machine and blah, 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 then, yeah, we're going to be responsible. And suddenly we're not really thinking about the last hour of our life in terms of, well, we're going to die, you know, at the top of the hour. We're thinking about the last of our hour of our life as being right now, because we're trying to invoke our presence continuously in order to increase the volume and the degree of presence we have in order to create weight. And then that's where the second paragraph comes in. The quality of our last hour says everything about the quality of our life. How far have we actually progressed in terms of the development, the growth and development of our presence? So that's how I'm kind of reading this chapter. Just EJ gets down with some students, senior pupils, which is what we are, and you know he presumes we already know a great deal, and some of these senior students have just scratched down a few, you know, jot down a few notes summarizing everything we already know. So that's what I have to say.
And if we look at practical work on self on that chapter 24, it is a practice of, this is my last hour of life. This is my last hour of life. How am I doing? Okay. How am I doing? And then reflect back each hour. How did I just do?
That's what I'm talking about. Any morning I get up, I get off.
That's the weighing of the soul in that regard. And if we move on to the next page, suppose in our last hour we are able to amplify impressions and we're continually perfecting presence. We are continually perfecting presence. This would give more weight to the soul. I mean, doesn't it just seem so bloody simple?
Yeah.
It's like, so work on your presence more.
Again, it's simple but not easy.
I'd like to just interject there. I like the way Gurdjieff put it. It's the heaviest thing in the world to lift, the lightest thing in the world to carry. So our work is learning how to lift it the first time, after which it's a natural byproduct of personal being.
Frederick Kettner said, these ideas are too simple for the human mind. They're just, because it's, and EJ's continually, I don't know, I mean, maybe because I've read his material so much and all that. I think he's just so pragmatic. He's so pragmatic for the advanced students. Here's what you're supposed to do. Let me remind you, here's what you're supposed to do. Oh, yeah, don't forget, here's what you're supposed to do. And it's kind of the same story. But man, oh man, but it's so fresh each time, because when you are in the sense of the essential self, it is, you're in the moment of creation at that time. There's a font of creativity occurring. So anything that you're doing is new, it's fresh. And you'll be in wonder of those around you. You'll see them, you'll be in wonder. This is a world of individuals, of depth. And the very last one says, eventually, we may understand what to do with our last hour. Eventually, we may understand what to do with our last hour. So, to take Silverdale's point up, eventually we'll know what to do with the hour that just passed. Right now, we've just finished an hour of work together. How'd it go? How did it go? And then tomorrow, when you're in the midst of all the things that you're doing, if you can stop for one moment and reflect back and say, how was that last hour? How did that last hour go? Am I taking the mantle of responsibility for these ideas that he just presented here? Because he's given us gold. And if we're given fine tools, then you should use them in a fine manner. I think part of the thing for tonight is just to reflect on the concept of that feeling, the sensation within you of responsibility. That's all I'm trying to do. If you can see it, it'll come, it'll be natural for you to go back and grab it. The responsibility we have to these ideas. Yeah, go ahead.
I've seen people around the community who have been for years, and still when there's the time to talk about these ideas, but more in a practical way, they don't have any idea of what is even being said. However, there's other people who actually, it's just one word, and there's the fully acknowledgement of what is being taught. With this type of ideas, I wonder what makes the difference. If it's and in part, one of my guesses is the attitude of how they approach the ideas. And one people do, they come and they meet the idea in a point. They reach the idea and the idea comes in to them. So it's like a mutual thing. For some others, what I've noticed is that there's this thing of they grasping or wanting to grab the idea, but there is not that part of responsibility of them part, their part of kind of stepping back a little from themselves and allowing that space for the idea also to come to them. I don't know if I'm being clear with this, but I'm just trying to point out something that I sense it has a lot to do with this responsibility and how it can be years and still not being clear what we are talking about here.
Grant says, continual invocation of presence to add weight to the soul. Thanks, George. Yes. And yet, the practice lightens us.
It's hard to evaluate another person's work. It really is. And you don't know what their job might be at any given moment, or what they may be there for one element only, and that element may be what the function of their work is. Everything else, they may be silent, they may be non-participative, they may be angry, but then when that one moment comes, they're there, 100%. You never know. So we have to exercise a certain form of wonder to each other as well. Where we can do our work is on ourselves. And we can work on our own presentation and our own generosity that we have to our fellow students. If people are here, it's weird enough. I mean, they've left the main path of the road to just be here. And it's hard to know, but, you know, and maybe people should be doing things in a different manner. I don't know.
Just touched on something that was in a few chapters back, which is that statement that DJ made to this group or one of these groups that the the practice or the work was not going to look the same for each person.
Ah, right.
You know, that it was the whole program. I mean, the way that someone is obligated to work, same as anything else. Path that you find. And I appreciate it. I'm not sure I followed everything that Paula said, but one thing that you seem to be saying is that some people, you know, I know over years and years that there some people are communicators and are very articulate, you know, like this, speaking like we're doing here. And others, the expression of their work might be something much more different, like an artifact, baking in the kitchen, or the cultivation of a garden, or building, being able to build an entire building, or
perform a play.
Yeah. Making jewelry, for instance.
Living the message.
Yeah, it's not about understanding. It's not about being in the capacity of understand an idea, you know, and see it and articulate and be eloquent with that idea. Because then that will be exactly what I'm not saying, and it's about is the practice, is living what it is. Maybe not able to even say it in words if they were asked, not necessarily I could articulate, but in their lives, yeah. And still, it's true that for any point of view, you cannot judge what the other has done or hasn't. But there is this factor of responsibility that it is undeniable. Even if you want to ignore it or not, there is there. And some of us are not doing it. Some of us might be doing it. So that's kind of like what I was wanting to bring in, is to observe each of us and say, until what point am I actually being aware that is a thing of two, not only the teaching coming to me or me grabbing it, but it's a mutual thing. It's like a dance. So it's a process, you know? How much of that really is going on, or just I am just staring with ideas around and stuff, but not really living them, you know, and not being experienced.
Yes.
Well, Bernie says the concept. Is this working?
Yeah.
Okay. Bernie says the concept of reflection.
Oh, wait. Go ahead.
He's turned up the sound.
Oh, I see. Bernie says the concept of reflection shoots me two images. Zooming out and also mirror image. Oh, I'm sorry, mirror ourself. So zooming out and also mirror ourself.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, my bad.
It occurred to me that Paula was referring to being responsive in the moment, in the space, to situations as they arise. And that when one's doing one's work, you can be responsive. You can if it requires action,
sure.
If it requires articulation, or if it requires whatever it requires, it comes in. And you're not enforcing it onto the space. You're allowing it to come through.
But one of the things I heard you say is that if you're doing your work, then you're able to respond in the space. Your skill set is such that you can respond in the space. Go ahead.
Well, I just perused this chapter and remembered something that Patricia liked to do off and on here, which is to read a chapter backwards, sentence by sentence. And this chapter, I suggest doing that because it makes for a very interesting read.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, at the risk of backtracking, I'd also like to read a passage from the risk chapter, which, Paula, tell me if this is relevant. Serious candidates for work exist on three definite levels. The first of these can be called science, the second, moonshine, and the third, truth, possessed by only a handful of initiates. Anyway, I'm not sure I understand fully what he's getting at there.
None of us were.
But it sounded to me a little bit like what Paula was getting at also. But, you know, it's significant to know that what he's saying, he's not saying that any one of those is not serious. They're all serious.
Well, moonshine is, in common parlance, is a form of liquor and or an alcoholic beverage. And the next thing that comes to mind is Rumi's references to wine and being intoxicated with the divine.
So we can be, if we focus on our sense of responsibility, on our intoxication, as Baudelaire says, get drunk on something, get drunk on the truth, get drunk and drink in that for yourself, then you can also be, like Ivan was to this young couple, an example ship. And then you carry the work forward in that way.
I would say that there's some element of taking responsibility, of accepting the obligation. There's an element that it will get you out of your head. It will get you out of ideas into the moment.
Has to.
It'll get you into the moment.
That's an interesting phrase that I just heard for the first time, Ivan. You take the responsibility, you know, seize the day. Carpe diem, you know, seize the day. It's before us. We walk into the shop that's selling all these ideas. Time to do a little shopping. Anyway, and thank you so much for coming tonight. Wait, we have one more closing
and the last word.
I want to acknowledge that I heard Ivan declare, because he is saying he's declaring it publicly, that he wants to remember this as he wakes up each day. And I wish you the best for your work effort.
Good fortune.
Good fortune.
Yeah.
You're welcome to phone me as early as you can.
And we'll take it up again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and we'll go through a few more of these chapters.
Yeah, we're going to do short ones, right?
This was very short.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for coming, and good night.
Good night.
Thanks, George.
Hey, thanks for hosting us. Good night.
Good night.